dusk, all the residents of Vrindavan, they climb to the roofs of the houses, because all day long they have been thinking about Krishna. And now is the time when he's coming home from herding the cows. And when they see the dust, they become so ecstatic, because that means that Krishna is getting closer. And then, after some time, they can hear the sound of the flute and the sounds of the cowherd boys playing. Before that time, Mother Yasoda was wondering, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? It's so late. It's getting dusk. When will he come? And some of the gopis would say, don't worry, Mother. He's late. Nothing has happened to him. He's just stayed a little extra time to receive the prayers of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. Don't worry. Don't worry about Krishna. In this way, all the residents of Vrindavan, all day long, from morning till night, and while they slept, they would just think about Krishna in one way or another. To come to that stage of always thinking about Krishna is not easy. It takes great, great, great fortune. It takes seriousness, intensity of purpose, but above all, it takes great fortune, that one has to get the mercy of exalted Vaishnavas who will plant the desire deeply in our heart that we can become real devotees of Krishna. To bring us on that path, to bring us closer to that path, Krishna is going to speak the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, at the time that we are now in the Battle of Kurukshetra, it's so far different from the Vrindavan mood. Rather than cowherd boys and cows and gopis and affectionate mothers and fathers, there is a great battle brewing. On one side, there are 11 Akshohinis of soldiers, elephants, cavalrymen on horses, bowmen with their arrows. And on the other side, there are also millions of men with their animals and weapons, just ready to begin fighting the bloodiest battle that the world has ever seen. And it is going to take place at any moment. We were explaining yesterday that before great events like this, there is a certain anticipation or excitement in the atmosphere, because these men practically have been practicing their whole lives fighting. And here is the opportunity to show their skill, to show their valor, to show their strength, to use their weapons. They are Kshatriyas. Fire courses through their veins. They have the spirit of warfare. They are not fearsome. They are longing to fight. This is the nature of a Kshatriya. So, we heard yesterday how Duryodhan, the commander of the Kuru army, was exciting his general, Dronacharya, making sure that he would fight with full enthusiasm. And Bhishma also, and Karna, and all the other fighters were being encouraged by Duryodhan to fight this battle, which was going to mean that he would get the kingdom if his side was victorious. Text 12. After Dronacharya or Duryodhan encouraged Dronacharya and Bhishma with that famous verse of that Aparyaptam Tirasmakam Balam Bhishma Birakshitam, where Aparyatam meant immeasurable, and it also meant insufficient, referring to Bhishma's strength. So Dronacharya and Bhishma were both feeling courage. So after that, immediately after encouraging Bhishma and Dronacharya, Bhishma Dev answered the words of Duryodhana, not with his own words, because he was a Kshatriya. Especially for Kshatriyas, actions speak louder than words. So to reassure Duryodhana that he would fight to his full capacity, even though the beloved Pandavas were on the other side, to encourage Duryodhana, who was feeling some fear in his heart, Bhishma, the great valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of the fighters, he blew his conch shell very loudly, making a sound like the roar of a lion, giving Duryodhana joy. Actually, the blowing of the conch shell by Bhishma had significance. First, he was telling Duryodhana that he would fight. He would do his best in the battle. He would do his duty. But he could not guarantee that he was going to win, that their side would win. Because we do our duty, and victory or defeat, win or loss, does not depend on our own strength. It depends on the will of the Lord. And the Lord himself, Madhava, Rishikesh, Krishna, he was on the other side. So therefore, there were so many signs that the battle would actually be lost by the side of Duryodhana, and the Pandava side would become victorious. In addition, Bhishma blew his conch shell because this would start everyone blowing their conch shells. And whose conch shell did Bhishma want to hear? From the depths of his heart, he wanted to hear Krishna blow his conch shell, because that conch shell was transcendental. And of course, Bhishma Dev was a great devotee of Krishna. After Bhishma Dev blew his conch shell, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets, and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. So we can just visualize this battle scene with millions of people on each side, and Bhishma Dev, the senior-most, most powerful warrior of the Kuru dynasty, the grandfather of both sides, blows his conch shell, and then all the Kurus respond by blowing conch shells, bugles, drums were playing. All the hairs on the Kshatriya's body were standing up, just anticipating, for just in a few moments, the battle would begin. Text 14. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their divya, or transcendental, conch shells. So this is a very auspicious emblem of the up-and-coming victory of the Pandava side, because anywhere there is Krishna and anywhere there is Arjuna, this is actually the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, there will be victory. So there are signs of the victory right here in this verse, because the great chariot that Krishna and Arjuna was given, were sitting on, was given by Agnidev, and the conch shell that Arjuna blew was given, and the quiver of arrows was given by Indradev, and the white horses was given by Chitrarata, a Gandhava. So there were so many special, auspicious symbols on the side of Krishna and Arjuna. And of course, the most auspicious sign of all, and the most auspicious symbol of the up-and-coming victory of the Pandavas, that Krishna himself was seated on the chariot of Arjuna. And because Krishna is there, who is also there? There is also the goddess of fortune is always there when Krishna is there. And when fortune is on one side, then how can that person be defeated? Panchajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjaya Pondram Dadmo Mahashankam Bhimakama Vikrodara. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. And we remember from the Krishna book that when Krishna was going to recover the son of his teacher, first he thought that son was within the belly of a demon at the bottom of a lake called, I think it was at Prabhachetra, I think. You remember? So there was a demon, so Krishna dove into the water and he killed that demon who was in the shape of a conch shell named Panchajanya. So he took that conch shell. He couldn't find the son of his teacher there because Yamaraj had already taken the son, but he took that conch shell named Panchajanya and it became his conch shell. So Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Panchajanya. Arjuna blew his, the Devadatta, and Bhim, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Pondram. So each of the different names, they have different significance. Here Krishna is referred to as Rishikesha, which means the master of the senses. Rishika Isha, the master of the senses. So because Krishna is the master of the senses, he is controlling everything that is going on, even though it is a battle that is going on, and we all know what's going to happen to Arjuna. But here is the indication that actually Krishna is in control. He is going to arrange the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita to be spoken by putting Arjuna in illusion so that the Bhagavad Gita can be spoken for our benefit, so we can learn how to prosecute our human life in such a way that we will end up in the spiritual world waiting for Krishna, missing Krishna, and just thinking about Krishna all day long. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, the last line. So, the Kauravas were predestined to lose the battle, and that was the message announced by the sound of the conch shells. Then King Yudhisthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijay, and Nakul and Sahadev blew the Sugosha and Manipushpaka. That great archer, the king of Kashi, the great fighter Sikandi, Dhristadumya, Varata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi, and others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhadra, they all blew their respective conch shells. So this is the Kshatriya mood. All the Kshatriyas from one side blew their conch shells, trying to show the power of the strength of the sound that they were about to make, which symbolized their strength in battle. And then in response to that, all the Kshatriyas on the other side blew their conch shells, beat the drums, blew their bugles. In this way, all the Kshatriyas were flexing their muscles and showing their strength. It's also interesting that in this verse, or it's actually three verses, 16 through 18, all those who are mentioned, there were millions and millions and millions of people, Kshatriyas, warriors on this battlefield. And all those in these three verses that are mentioned, along whose conch shells are mentioned, they are the survivors of the battle. King Yudhisthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijay. Nakul and Sahadev blew the Sugosha and Manipushpaka. This is practically the only survivors in the battle of Kurukshetra. And another survivor is Satyaki. And why did he survive? Although his conch shell isn't mentioned here, it's because he is a Parijit or unconquerable. But this was such a complete devastation. Millions and millions of people are killed. And it's hard for us to conceive of all the blood that was spilled, that will be spilled in this battle of Kurukshetra. From the point of view of morality, of horrible, the horrors of war, it is a horrible battle. Yet we're going to find that Krishna wants it. And he considers it most religious. But looking at it from a mundane point of view, a typical point of view, it is the most horrible occurrence. Millions of people are killed. When two people are killed, or 10 people are killed, it makes the newspaper headlines. 10 people killed in a bus crash. 13 people killed when a building collapses. But millions and millions will be killed in this battle of Kurukshetra. And still it will be considered the most religious occurrence. How is this possible? It is hard to understand, because what actually is religion and what is not religion is hard to understand. It is easy to understand if one knows the secret. But if one doesn't know the secret of surrender to Krishna, it is practically impossible to understand what is good and what is bad, what is religious and what is irreligious. One must know the desire of Krishna. This is the key to understanding what is religious and what is irreligious. So all the kanchas, first on the side of the Kauravas blue, and then the divya, divine kanchas of Krishna, Arjuna blue, and then all the Pandavas, the warriors at the Pandava side, blew all their kanchas. The blowing of these different kanchas became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. When Bhijma and the others on the side of Duryodhana blew their respective kanchas, there was no heartbreaking on the part of the Pandavas. Such occurrences are not mentioned. But in this particular verse it is mentioned that the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra were shattered by the sounds vibrated by the Pandavas' party. This is due to the Pandavas and their confidence in Lord Krishna. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord has nothing to fear, even in the midst of the greatest calamity. Chipram bhavati dharmatma shasva chanti nagasthiti kauntaya pratijanihi name bhakti panashiti. For one who is fixed firmly with faith, taking full shelter of Krishna, there is no question of anxiety or fear, even in the greatest calamity. Parikshit Maharaj, a perfect example of this. Parikshit Maharaj was cursed to die in 7 days. It's inconceivable to us, practically, what consciousness change we would have to go through, how terrified we would be if we actually thought we had to die. But Parikshit was fearless, because his consciousness was fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. With full faith, he was realized. A devotee of the Lord, he lives only in the mercy of Krishna, because he is fixed in full faith in Krishna. And because he is fixed in Krishna, everything that happens to him, he sees as Krishna's mercy. So how could there be a calamity for him? How could there be a fearful situation? He just simply experiences Krishna's mercy. This is a glorious state, and we'll learn how to achieve that state by hearing the Bhagavad Gita. One who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, this means real shelter, sharanagati, anukulasya sankalpa pratikulasya bhavajanam, rakshishyatitti vishvasa gotripte varanam tata. There are 6 items of this fully taking shelter of Krishna. One has to fully accept everything favorable for Krishna's service. Reject anything unfavorable. Always think that Krishna is your maintainer. Always think that Krishna will protect you. And keep yourself meek and humble. and one other that has escaped.
Full surrender.
Yeah, it's Gotripte Varanam Dutta. That means always keep yourself under the protection of Krishna. So in this way, when one is actually fully surrendered to Krishna, he is fully confident, like the child when he's walking with his father. Even though the child may be walking across a very dangerous street in their cars and trucks and bullock carts going back and forth, but when he's holding his father's hand, is he afraid? He's in a dangerous situation, superficially, but because his faith and shelter is locked by his affectionate holding to his father like that, then there is no fear for him, even in a difficult situation. This is devotion. So the conch shells blew, and that meant the battle was just minutes away. At that time, the son of Pandu, Arjun, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. The battle was about to begin. O king, because Sanjaya is speaking this to Dhritarashtra, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Arjuna said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. So here, the hint of the problem that Arjuna is going to run against. It is hinted here in this verse, because he's pulled out his arrows. He took up his Gandiva bow. Arjuna was famous. And the Gandiva bow was famous as Arjuna's bow. His arrows were out. His bow is practically drawn. And then he says, I want to see something over there. You come and take me. The arrows are drawn. It is time to shoot, and you want to look at something? What is this, Arjuna? There was actually no cause for Arjuna's lamentation, because as it explained by Prabhupada in the purport, that Hanuman was there. It is told in the Mahabharata that when Bhima was climbing the mountains in the Himalayas going towards the heavenly planets, he was going where no one had ever gone before. No human was allowed to go there. He was just going. He was so powerful. He was knocking down trees. He would roar, and elephants would run, and the lions would roar back in response, but then keep in their caves. He would be climbing the mountains, and then suddenly he saw an old monkey there, who of course was Hanuman. They were both sons of Vayu, the wind god. And the monkey's tail was blocking the path. So Bhima, the powerful Kshatriya, told this monkey to move his tail so he could go on. He didn't want to step over it because he was a lowly monkey and he was a Kshatriya beam himself. So he told the monkey to move his tail. And the monkey said, oh, I'm so old now. Please, I'm too old to move it. Why don't you just move it for me? So Bhim, with his great strength, approached the tail and couldn't budge it at all. And he couldn't move it at all with all his great strength. So finally, he asked Hanuman to reveal who he was, and he said, I'm your brother. I am Hanuman. And then he asked, Bhima asked him to show him that form that he used to jump across the Lanka. And he started growing bigger and 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 bigger until he finally said, okay, sufficient, I have seen something. And then at that time, Hanuman promised Bhim that he would come there to help in the battle of Kurukshetra because everyone knew that it was coming. The great battle was going to come, not by the desire of the Pandavas, but due to the particular nature of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and the other sons of Dhritarashtra. So Hanuman said, I will be present on the flag of Arjuna. And as you, Bhim, are going through the battle, screaming with your war cry, I will also add my cry, my war cry to yours, giving even more power and putting great fear into the hearts of the Kauravas. And of course, when someone is fearful, one doesn't want to fight, one can't fight with strength, one can only run. So Hanuman was actually there on the flag of Arjuna. So Hanuman was there, Krishna himself was driving the chariot, and as we said, because Krishna is there, the goddess of fortune is there, Arjuna was ready to fight, his bow was out, and all of a sudden, let me see who I have to fight here. What's going on, Arjuna? So this is Krishna's or Arjuna's words. O infallible one, senayor ubayor madhye ratam stapayame chita. This is a very sweet verse. Please draw, O infallible one, O Achyuta. Why is Krishna called Achyuta here? Because he is infallible, meaning he doesn't ever fall down. So when someone is considered a servant, he is considered to be inferior to his master. But when Krishna acts as the servant, he is not fallen from his position as the Supreme Lord. He is not degraded as less than his devotee. But it is just a special aspect of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Practically speaking, this is what makes Krishna the Supreme Lord. Because he enjoys serving his devotee. This is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he doesn't lose anything. He is still a Achyuta, although he is serving his devotee Arjuna by driving his chariot. And this is actually the sweetness that a devotee relishes when he hears Bhagavad Gita, when he reads Srimad Bhagavatam. He's understanding how Krishna, the Supreme Controller, the Parameshwar, the Param Brahman, is being tied up by the ropes of Mother Yasoda, is driving the chariot of Arjuna, is clapping his hands when the gopis are standing around him and clapping their hands when he's just a little boy. When he's holding on to the tail of the calf and being pulled through the mud of Vrindavan. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's practically completely controlled by the Braja Bhakti, the devotion of his Vrindavan devotees. He's like a puppet in their hands. He is driven mad by their loving sentiment. This is Krishna. And his devotees love Krishna so much that Krishna feels incapable of returning, reciprocating with their love. He feels that their love is so powerful, it has defeated my ability to give them something. Naturally, when someone gives you a present and serves you, naturally, unless you are completely ungrateful, you want to give them something. Naturally. If one's heart is a little soft, if one is a human, when one has spent time serving you, giving you so many things, then naturally we want to give them something in return. But Krishna felt that the love of the residents of Vrindavan is so great that I cannot give them anything back. They have defeated me. I'm incapable of reciprocating
with their imperfection. So when a devotee sees the loving relationship, the loving exchanges, when he hears about the loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, his heart melts and he vows that I will become that kind of devotee. I want to serve that kind of devotee. I want to become a devotee and love Krishna.
I heard Prabhupada tell the story once on a tape of one that comes from Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was once a Brahmin who was staying, or every day he would go to the temple in Rangachetra, Sri Rangam. And he was illiterate, he couldn't read. But yet, he would sit there every day and read, or attempt to read, pronouncing every word improperly. He would read 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. He would read the entire Bhagavad Gita out loud every day, and people would walk by, all the people would come for darshan of the deity, they would walk by and laugh at him because he was reading so funny, pronouncing every word wrong, and they would tease him, and he would be sitting there crying with tears coming from his eyes. And they would tease him. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he toured South India, he saw this devotee and he went to him. He was watching him and saw that he's reading Bhagavad Gita, pronouncing every word wrong. He was no Sanskrit scholar. He wasn't even a Sanskrit neophyte beginner, practically speaking. He was pronouncing every word wrong, but yet tears were coming from his eyes. His heart was melting. So he went to him and said, "My dear sir," Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear sir, you're reading the Bhagavad Gita, 18 chapters every day, but you can't read it, you can't understand it. Why is that? Why are you doing this?" So he said, the Brahmana said, "My dear sir," he understood that Mahaprabhu was not teasing him like the others. He said, "My dear sir, my Guru Maharaj has ordered me to read 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita every day. Although I can't read, he has ordered me, so I'm trying my best to follow his order." So of course that teaches us how we actually become advanced, just by that simple determination to follow the order of Guru and Krishna in that way. But Mahaprabhu replied, "But you're not just reading it, you're crying on it. You're crying as you read. Why? What are you understanding?" So the Brahmin said, "Although I cannot understand the philosophy, I am simply thinking that Krishna is so bhakta vatsala, he is the servant of his devotees, that he is driving the chariot of his devotee Arjuna. He's taking the position of servant. Senayorubayo madhye rattam stapayam amechuta. But you, oh Krishna, Achuta, you drive my chariot to the midst of the army so I can see who I have to fight." And Krishna says, "Yes." And he drives it. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Planets, universes are coming from his expansions, skinnals. He has unlimited goddesses of fortune serving him in Vaikuntha, in Vrindavan. And this same Lord, when Arjuna says, "Senayor Vayomadye, Rattam Stapayamechuta," and he drives the chariot. He's so much the devotee of his devotees. So the Brahmin explained that when I'm reading, I'm not understanding the philosophy so much, but I'm just seeing this picture in my mind's eye of how Krishna is so merciful and kind to his devotees. And in the mood of serving his devotees, that he's driving the chariot of Arjuna. When I see that picture in my mind, my heart melts and tears come to my eyes. And when Mahaprabhu heard that, which is the real deep understanding of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This is bhakti. When Mahaprabhu heard that, he immediately embraced him and said, you really understand Bhagavad Gita. You are the real knower of Bhagavad Gita. Senayo ubayo madhye rattam stapayamejita. So when Krishna is driving the chariot of his devotee, he is glorified as a chuta. He is not, it makes him even more glorious. So Arjuna wanted to see, with his bow drawn, he wanted to see who he had to fight. Prabhupada explains in the purport, although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy, he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees. And thus, he is addressed here as infallible. He never lets his devotee down. Yoga chemam vahamyam. We will speak about this verse later on. He never fails in his affection to his devotees. Kaunteya pratijani hi name bhakta parashiti. He tells Arjuna to declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. And every devotee to this day, even in ISKCON, or possibly even especially in ISKCON, devotees who have taken a chance and served Krishna in dangerous situations, you can hear unlimited Sankirtan stories of devotees who went out and were in a dangerous situation and were protected by Krishna. Personal experiences, day after day after day, we could fill up books and books and books of stories to this day of how the devotees, they do something for Krishna, even though we may not be qualified. Simply on the order of our spiritual master, we are trying to do something for Krishna, taking a risk for him. And then Krishna keeps us so safe. So safe. This is actually the safest position to be in. To be in a dangerous position on Krishna's order, materially dangerous on Krishna's order. We must be sure we are doing it on Krishna's order. It is Krishna's desire, not that we are whimsical and looking for danger. But if Krishna wants us to do something, that is safety. Like Prabhupada said about living in Vrindavan. He said, living in Vrindavan is like living on, like sitting on the lap of Krishna. Sitting on the lap of Krishna. So intimate. So when a devotee is serving Krishna in a difficult situation, Krishna holds him so tightly. And the devotee can even feel that. How carefully he is protected by Krishna, even though he may be a beginner. This is Krishna's special mercy. By the mercy of Prabhupada. By the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the mercy of the disciplined succession. There's actually no doubt about this. Anyone who has done, we'll call it dangerous preaching, or not even dangerous preaching, just any kind of preaching, because preaching in the material world is always dangerous, because there are so many people who are against the authority of Krishna. So many protections. I have to say a few stories right now. In the United States, very famous. Anyway, it used to be famous. It doesn't seem like it's famous right now. It was a big rock and roll festival. And there was and hundreds of thousands of people came to this one place in New York, and they were taking intoxication, and they were playing heavy, horrible rock and roll music, and the atmosphere was demonic. And it was raining, and it was muddy, and people were living in tents, and people were doing horrible things, taking intoxication drugs. It was horrible. So, by Krishna's arrangement, myself and two other devotees were there. And there was one stage on the side, not the main stage.
But we decided we were going to chant Hare Krishna and get everyone to chant Hare Krishna. So right before we went up on stage, there were three or four of us only. Right before we went up on the stage, we were simple devotees. We had a pair of kartals. We were innocent. Everyone was intoxicated. And the group right before we were on stage, they were playing music like this. They were playing heavy, horrible, tamagun music, really loud. And they were singing demonic verses. They were, really, this is true. They were singing, "You are moving the sun! You are moving the moon!" It was really crazy in the atmosphere. It was very getting dark. It was getting nighttime, and everyone and people were dancing, intoxicated. They were dancing with themselves. They were just dancing. It was completely demonic and crazy. So they finished singing about how they were moving the sun and the moon, and then we get up on stage, you know, four devotees. And we say, "Hare Krishna, everyone." We would like everyone to chant Hare Krishna. And we start saying, "Hare Krishna." And some of the people start chanting along. And we say, "Chant Hare Krishna." We're very simple and innocent. It was in 1968, I think, or maybe the beginning of 1969. And then there was a motorcycle gang. Of course, you fortunate people from India don't know what a motorcycle gang is. But those of us from New York and the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States, I don't know if there are motorcycle gangs in Portugal. But are there? Some. These crazy people were very heavy people, and they sometimes will beat people for no reason. They travel around on motorcycles and beat people and they don't like law and order. So we're saying, "Hare Krishna." And there's this one motorcycle gang from New York started calling out, "Shut up! Stop that chanting!" And they started using horrible curse words. And more people started chanting, saying, "Stop it! Stop it!" And it was starting to get very violent. And we just, "Hare Krishna," and they were all intoxicated, and they started singing out, "Rock and roll music is our soul." It was starting to get very tense, and all of a sudden, the electricity completely stopped, all the lights went out, the generators blew up or something, they stopped. Right before they were about to do something horrible, everything just stopped. And it was dark. We just walked off the stage. But it was it was actually amazing. We could understand that it was a dangerous situation. And we simply, innocently, and maybe foolishly were there. But Krishna protected us. We were just trying. We didn't know anything. We didn't know the philosophy. But we were trying to serve Krishna. Another time that I remember in Hong Kong, when we first got to Hong Kong, myself and my wife, we had no money at all. Nothing. We were begging a little bit, and there were, and the people in Hong Kong, who's been to Hong Kong? Anyone been there? Yes, of course. It is the most intensely materialistic, horrible city in the world. It's my opinion. Is this your opinion? Yes. It's a horrible materialistic place. And people are not very generous either. So somehow or another we had collected $150 US and we were trying to establish a temple. We were living in a little guest house room that was horrible. And we tried to rent a room, an apartment, in a nicer area. And we took our $150 and we put it down as a deposit. But somehow or another, we couldn't get the apartment and we didn't have the money. So for 2 weeks in this horrible city of Hong Kong, we had two Hong Kong dollars.
And that is, we can translate into US dollars or rupees if you like. It's about 25 US cents, or how much is that in rupees? 7 rupees or so. For 2 weeks, we had 7 rupees. And every day at that time, it was miraculous. That's all one could say. Every day, someone would come and bring some vegetables for us to cook. Someone would come and offer to pay our rent. Every day, something like this would happen. And I was never in less anxiety about money in my whole life, because we had no money to be in anxiety about. Krishna was every day feeding us, paying the rent, taking care of us. And it was so obvious, because we were young, we were innocent, we didn't know anything. But yet, somehow on the order of Prabhupada, we were trying to preach in Hong Kong, a very dangerous place. Somehow or another, we were just trying to do a little service, even though we didn't have any knowledge. We were innocent, simple. So for 2 weeks that went on, and then the money came back, that $150 came back. And then no more vegetables, no more people coming and paying the rent. It was quite amazing. And we were sitting there, we were thinking, this is really amazing, isn't it? Because sometimes we're wondering, is Krishna really there like that? Is he really insignificant in me? And the fact is that if we are trying to become devotees, aspiring to become devotees, yes, he does. Even though we may not be the most exalted devotees, yes, he does. And this was just two little experiences. Every Sankirtan devotee, every preacher has experiences like this every day, practically speaking. I'm sure the China devotees can tell us so many things, how they were impossible situations. Another time in Hong Kong, we couldn't get our visa extended. Oh, I'm going to go on with Hong Kong stories if I don't watch out and forget the Bhagavad Gita. But we couldn't get our visa extended, and we were going to have to leave. So we wanted to stay because Prabhupada wanted us to preach. So we got a letter from Prabhupada, and he said, this is a typical thing that the country doesn't like to extend your visa when you're in the country. So you go around to the influential people that you know, and you try to get letters from them saying that what you're doing is worthwhile. So we knew one man who was the head of, in Hong Kong, of TWA Airlines. He was the president of the company there or something, the chairman. So we went to ask him. We were helping his son. His son had been taking some drugs, and we were trying to help him through Krishna consciousness stop taking drugs. So he was very, very friendly to us. So we said to him, Prabhupada has told us to go around and get some letters for immigration to help us with our immigration, because we can't get our visa extended. So you're one of the only influential people we know, respected people. So could you give us a letter saying that we're doing good work, so we can give it to the immigration people? So he said, I can do better than give you a letter to the immigration people. I'm eating dinner tonight with the head of immigration. So I'll tell him. So anyway, he did that, and we got our visa extended. Because we followed, Prabhupada said that we should go around and ask people. So this is what happens, actually, when one insignificant as one may be, if one surrenders to Guru and Krishna, when Krishna reciprocates with that, yeyitam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajam. Krishna reciprocates with that. So Arjuna, at this time,
wasn't sure what he should do. So he said, oh yes, we were reading the purport. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy, he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees. And again, the devotee doesn't even have to be the most exalted of paramahamsas. And thus he is addressed here as infallible. As charioteer, he had to carry out the orders of Arjuna. And since he did not hesitate to do so, he is addressed as infallible. Although he had accepted the position of a charioteer for his devotee, his supreme position was not challenged. In all circumstances, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Rishikesh, the Lord of the total senses. The relationship between the Lord and his servitor is very sweet and transcendental. The servitor is always ready to render service to the Lord, and similarly, the Lord is always seeking an opportunity to render some service to the devotee. He takes greater pleasure in his pure devotees assuming the advantageous position of ordering him than he does in being the giver of orders. Since he is master, everyone is under his order, and no one is above him to order him. But when he finds that a pure devotee is ordering him, he obtains transcendental pleasure, although he is the infallible master of all circumstances. Then Arjuna continues, let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded sons of Dhritarashtra. Sanjaya said, O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. It is interesting that in the Bhagavatam, the first time we actually see Krishna, we actually see what Krishna is doing. He's actually doing something. It is in the first canto, I think the seventh chapter, when he is driving the chariot of Arjuna. And here again, the first time we see Krishna, he is driving the chariot of Arjuna. He is serving his devotees. This is so glorious. In the presence, Bhishma Drona Pramukata Savesham Cha Mahitshitam Uvacha Partha Pashyaitan Samavetan Kununiti. Bhishma Drona Pramukata, that means Bhishma and Drona, right, Pramukata means right in front. So Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna, and where did he drive it? Right in front of Bhishma, and right in front of Drona. And he said, in the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus who are assembled here. So Krishna drove the chariot of Arjuna right in front of the face of Bhishma and Drona because he wanted to disturb Arjuna. This is all Krishna is doing. It has already been said he is Rishikesh. He is the master of the senses. So he is the master of Arjuna's senses. And he is putting Arjuna right in front of his beloved teacher and his beloved grandfather, so his heart will melt and he will not want to fight. There, Arjuna could see within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, his grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-laws and well-wishers. So we'll stop here. We'll pick up that from that point tomorrow. It may take us 2 more days to finish this chapter.